Again, this is Program PM. You can tell from our rather outer spacious sounding music right there, that's where we're going right now, into outer space, or the subject thereof. Ufology Roundtable of the Air. Unidentified flying objects, flying saucers, if you want to be a little bit more down to earth. And on hand tonight, a member of our regular UFO Roundtable panel, Earl Neff. Bob Grove, again, is weathered in out there in Strongsville tonight. You made it in okay, I see, Earl.
Chinese New Year.
That's right. Happy 4,666 to all of our, I think that's the year, our listeners of Chinese extraction, numbered among which certainly is not Mr. Wesley Fitch, who's here with us on the UFO Roundtable tonight. Wesley, what is your interest generally in UFO? How did you get interested in ufology?
Well, I became interested about 7 years ago. The Southern West Virginia Southern Monster case, I think, was the first one that ever really aroused my interest.
Hey, that's the one we were talking about last week. What is the name of that confounded thing? There was a name for it. The something...
Southern West Virginia Monster
the
case.
The Sutton... That's the name I couldn't think of.
Southern West Virginia.
Yeah, that was quite a case where the aroma... I use that word instead of stink.
Or stench.
Or the aroma clung for several days, as I understand it. But this was your beginning point, huh?
That's right. That was the first thing that aroused my interest in the subject.
That's strange. That's the first thing that I ever heard about UFOs.
Right.
I was working in Charleston, West Virginia at the time, and a young man with an all-night radio program down there, Hugh McPherson.
Oh, yes.
Used to have a lot of discussions about UFO, and I used to talk with you about it.
I believe he's still there.
Yeah, is he still there?
Right.
After all these years. Well, then, your specialty area, though, has been along collecting visual proof or evidence.
That's right.
It? And goodness gracious, have you got it. Oh, for 16 weeks, I've held out against these two guys. I've held out against Earl, and I've held out against Bob, and, you know, knocking down every picture as not as a sure fraud, but at least the possibility existed that there was fraud connected with the pictures that I've seen. They've been good ones, some of them almost convincing. But nothing, I'm afraid, Earl, as I've seen here tonight. Now, let me explain to the listeners that spread out before us here, Mr. Fitch has a big collection of pictures. Let's see now, Wes, suppose you take it from here just for a few moments, and let's go over this first most authentic picture in your estimation. Can you explain that?
Yes, be glad to. This is the front page, a photostatic copy of the Telegraph Register of McMinnville, Oregon, a Thursday, June 8, 1950. The top article reads, "At long last, authentic photographs of a flying saucer." Two views are shown here of the picture that Farmer Trent took of this object, which was hovering over his farm in McMinnville, Oregon. And Frank Edwards of WTTV Indianapolis, or at least formerly of there, made the statement that in his opinion, these were the two most authentic pictures of a flying saucer in existence.
Let me just interrupt long enough to say the fact that he is formerly of there had nothing to do with flying saucers. He's now with one of the networks in New York, I believe, isn't he, Wes?
That's what I mean, yeah.
Now, these pictures are just astounding to me. Here, this thing is hanging up there in the sky. Someone could say, well, it looks real, but it's probably fraud. What convinces you, Wes, that it's not fraud?
Because of the facts surrounding it, that Farmer Trent and his wife gave a very authentic sounding account of how they got home this late afternoon, got out of their cars, they drove in their yard, and saw this object hovering in the sky at the rear of their farm. And they had been taking pictures at a picnic and had two negatives left in the camera. And he quickly dashed out from the backyard and snapped these two views. One is the object was stationary over his farm, and then the other one, as it started to move, caught these two different photos.
Let me just, for a moment, while you're getting that other stuff, describe this. This is
here's a close-up of the negative right here, taking the actual negative that he took.
Now, the larger picture shows a conventional farm with the barn there and the wires from the telegraph poles there and the mailbox is there. Up in the sky, you see what is irrevocably a flying object of some kind. It's round, looks like a saucer. Now, the other angle of it shows that it is more narrow at the top than it is at the bottom, which is a conventional picture you get.
It definitely shows a protrusion, which might have been an antenna, as you will notice.
On the top there.
This is the second photo they snapped as it turned to leave.
goodness gracious. This is one time that I wish for a moment we could borrow one of the assets of the television medium and show people this. Well, now, while I am looking over some more of these pictures to talk to listeners about, and I'm sure that Earl wants to see some too, let's check in on what's been going on during the course of this past week. Well, among other things, we had a couple of flying saucer reports. Earl, now, you had some calls at home about these reports, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had stopped in the other afternoon, as you recall, to talk with you, and at that time I learned that Fred Sylvanus had called you the night before. I had spoken with him on the phone just a moment or two before he had gotten this call and told him I was leaving the house, and so he called you then. It was these boys we talked with tonight. Isn't that correct?
Right. And when I called the boys, they are Anthony Malamon and Harold McMahon, both of Solon, Ohio. Now, I talked to them just moments ago to find out about this sighting of an unidentified flying object that took place on Monday evening. As I understand, the time was somewhere between 7 and 8 o'clock Monday evening. And here's the conversation as I started it with Harold McMahon.
Bob Gross said for me to call you that you had this sighting the other night?
Oh, yes.
We're tape recording this now. Could you tell me about what happened? How did it come about?
Well,
let me just explain right now that this is another flying saucer report we had. This is not Anthony Malama or Harold McMahon. This is Mr. Summers, Mr. Norm Summers. This was one I was going to tell you about. This is Mr. Norm Summers, who sighted one last night. And the time, I believe, well, we'll find the time on the tape.
Bob Gross said for me to call you that you had this sighting the other night?
Oh, yes.
We're tape recording this now. Could you tell me about what happened? How did it come about?
Well, I was just coming home. It was about 10:30, and my driveway is uphill, and I was going uphill, and I saw this ball of green fire, or at least it looked like fire.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, the size of a nickel held at arm's length. And it had a cone-shaped orange or yellow.
Can you talk a little louder, please, Norm?
All right.
Can you talk a little louder, please?
Yes, it had an orange-shaped cone, an orange-colored cone-shaped tail coming out behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it came from almost directly overhead and went down very similar to a shooting star, a meteorite.
Mm-hmm.
And
could it not have been a meteorite or a shooting star?
Well, it didn't seem to be like any I'd ever seen before.
Yeah, it seemed like you've seen before.
And it was bright green, real bright green. And it went down below the horizon, and that was the last I'd seen it.
Now, about how long did all this take?
Oh, 2 or 3 seconds.
Just 2 or 3 seconds?
Yes. At first, I thought it was a flare, but it was going much too fast for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Bob. I didn't know what to think about it.
Had you ever seen a flying object before?
No, I haven't.
You never have?
Been awful interested, you know.
What was your impression of this? What, now, that you've got a couple of days to think it over, do you think this was?
Well, I talked to Bob about it, and we discussed the possibility of ball lightning. I think it was so cold. I think we were around 12 below zero that night.
Mm-hmm.
It was very clear and dry, and we thought it might be that.
Now, about what time was this?
It's about 10:30.
10:30, go ahead.
And other than that, I couldn't come up with anything.
Okay, well, let's see. Now, this was 10:30. It was Tuesday night, right?
Right.
Or, let's see, is Tuesday night or Wednesday night?
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, last night, yeah.
Yes.
So if anyone else had a same experience, and the location of that again, Norm?
Right above North Royalton.
Right above North Royalton.
I teach science at North Royalton. I asked my classes today, and I had one other fellow who had seen it last night, too, at the same time.
Well, your students saw it.
Right,
one
of my students.
Well, let me repeat, as I did a moment ago, that if anyone else or yourself ever sees anything again, you might call the UFO Report Center and call us here at KYW, Program PM. The UFO Report Center number is 234. We'd like to coordinate these things. Thank you very much, Norm, for talking to us.
Okay.
Right. Night.
Right.
Now, let's check in with the earlier sighting. That was Norm Summers, who saw the sighting last night. And you heard him give the time, I think, about 10:30, he said, Earl, didn't he? Along about 10:30. Now, Monday night. Now, the reason I'm making a point of the time, because after both of these are over, I have something that I haven't told Earl yet, or Mr. Wesley Fitch. It's kind of a surprise. All right, now, Monday night, this was the sighting that took place.
Earl, can you tell me, just exactly how you sighted this unidentified flying object on Monday night? What were the circumstances? Where were you?
We were out in his yard.
Out in whose yard?
Tony's yard.
Tony Milano? Mm-hmm.
And he has a 4.5-inch reflector telescope. And we were out looking at constellations, and we happened to sight this object, and at the present it seemed to be standing still, and it slowly started to move, and it was a bright object, and it was one of the brightest things in the sky, and was moving pretty fast, and then it started to, for me it seemed, started to rise upward, and it dimmed down a little bit as it went up, and then as it dimmed down, it just went up like completely. And it, the whole time, I'd say it lasted about 20 seconds or maybe a little more or a little less.
Mm-hmm. All right, speak to Tony for a second, then, please.
Yes, hello?
Hello, Tony?
Yes?
What color was the light that you saw Monday night?
It was a bluish white.
A bluish white. Now, was it any distinctive shape or anything?
No, it wasn't.
It was just a blurry light?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A point of light, more or less, than a star would seem.
Is there any way in your own mind, I take it that you're an astronomy fan?
Yes, I'm an amateur astronomer.
You're an amateur astronomer. Now, do you believe, in fact, that this was a flying saucer that you saw of some kind?
Well, I don't think I'm qualified to actually say that it was or was not a flying saucer, but it was surely not an airplane or anything. It didn't seem man-made, I'll say that. It didn't seem man-made.
Mm-hmm. And you don't think it was an airplane then?
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't an airplane, no.
And there's nothing else. Just a minute now. One of our members of the UFO Roundtable, I think, would like to ask you a question. This is Earl Neff, who's on every Thursday night with me. I think he has a question he wants to ask you.
Tony?
Yes?
This is Earl Neff speaking. I'd like to ask you this. You have a telescope, have you not?
Yes, I do.
You probably have a small finder on that you first locate your object?
Yes, the white field finder.
Yes. What power is your scope?
Well, my scope is, the lowest power is 40, and I use sometimes up to 180.
I see. Well, then it's quite difficult to get it into your scope, even though you get it in your finder. Isn't that true?
No, not especially.
Were you able to track it?
Well, for a very brief time.
I see.
Very, very brief.
And when you saw it through the scope, did it look still as a light, or were you able to actually identify any detail?
No, no detail.
No detail. I'll turn you back to Harv Morgan. Thank you very much.
Tony? Tony?
Yes?
Thanks very much to you and Harold for joining us on our UFO roundtable on Program PN. If you have any other sightings like this, or if you know anyone else who has any sightings, you might call us and also call the UFO Report Center. The number is 234. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm. Tony?
And right now it's 10:45, 15 minutes to go before the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're talking about UFOs on Program PM. And speaking of UFOs, I think this has a very definite tie-in. A question. Want to keep up with all the arts? Well, Show Magazine has it down to a science. Each monthly issue of Show Magazine views, previews, and reviews all of the most important happenings in the theater, motion picture, art galleries, books, and music, as seen by many of America's foremost writers, critics, and commentators. In addition, the current issue of Show Magazine presents May We Borrow Your Husband, a shocking new story by Graham Greene. Tennessee Williams' mother writes a memorable account of the famous playwright's childhood, and Max Lerner, C.S. Lewis, James Gavin, and Ed Diamond each give their views of our newest frontier, the space age. Now, for provocative commentary on all the arts, outstanding stories and articles, plus award-winning art and photography, get Show, the magazine of the arts, at your newsstand today. Next week on our UFO Roundtable, by that time, we'll have read the article in Show Magazine. We'll discuss it right here. Some of the concepts of outer space from the scientific, from the clergy standpoint, and from the standpoint of several other famous people. That'll be next week right here on the UFO Roundtable. Now, it's 14 before 11. We're not going to take any phone calls tonight because we have so many things to go over. with Mr. Wesley Fitch, who's visiting us tonight, and, of course, Earl Neff. Now, Earl, I've been kind of monopolizing thing here. Before I get into another area...
All right, take advantage of it.
Well, once I get going on these pictures that I've seen the last couple of minutes now, things are going to fly. So what particularly could we do to make you happy right now?
Well, there's been some questions over a period of time relative to that one mention I made one time that was case number 12 in the Project Blue Book, and where a man was seen head and shoulders. It was through our own Mr. Fitch, who is visiting us here tonight, that I did get the balance of that information, and it'll only take a moment to mention it, so I thought I should take this time. The party who took the picture, I wasn't who told the story, I should say, I wasn't able to tell at the time who it was, but it was Bill Squires of Pittsburgh, Kansas. He's a musician, and he's on a station, a TV station in Pittsburgh, Kansas. The object rose straight up and out of sight in 30 to 45 seconds. And in a letter that he wrote to our friend, Mr. Fitch, back in November the 15th, 1960, he made this comment. He said he was visited by one man from Washington, along with receiving many phone calls. And he said that if at any time I see anything again and it turns out to be from outer space, and if there is any way I can talk to them, I'll try my best to get them to take me back with them. Maybe they don't pay as much taxes as we do here.
There'd be a lot of other things missing up there, too, I bet.
I just wanted to inject that as long as Wes was here tonight.
This kind of reminds me of Carl Lorenzen, wasn't it, telling us?
Yes, about the kidnapping.
Yeah, about the kidnapping.
Yes, that book, or that bulletin has not yet come out, but I do remember seeing a letter that Wes had the other night from Carl, and I think she's getting pretty close to the publishing point of that.
Well, we kind of promised her that we would wait for her official report.
Right.
So let's not delve into that tonight. Let me take advantage of having Mr. Fitch here on hand. Now, friends, I have seen in the last few minutes more astounding photographs that just amaze me because, you know, after 15 or 16 weeks, I've still been holding off very strongly. But these are on the verge of convincing me that there's something to this. Now, why do these look so very, very real to me, Wes?
I say because they are.
Well, beyond that now, this is a picture of a field. Above it is this flying object hovering over the field. And you have other angles of the same picture up here. What pictures do these represent? Now, what are they from?
Well, these are called the stock photos taken in Passaic, New Jersey, back in 1950. This man took 7 photos of this object that he saw over his backyard. He got 4 particularly good ones, of which I have copies here. One shows it to be somewhat of a hat-shaped object, as you will note.
Yeah.
And another one, again, another view of the same.
This one's low.
That's right, yeah. Very low. There is a tilted, shows a white rim with a black center.
This is from the bottom. Now, this shows the whole bottom of the...
That's right.
And the car right below it, looking so real, like the flying saucer has ever, you know, just an everyday common occurrence. There's a car, and there's a telephone pole, and there's something up the sky.
Well, that would have been very, very difficult to fake those photos.
It certainly would.
There is another view of it as it was leaving.
And what about this one over here?
Well, this is a different one, taken over the foothills of California by a passing motorist, a man by the name of Weston, who claimed to have seen this object and jumped from his car and quickly snapped this photo.
You can very plainly see the hills there in the background with this hat-shaped flying object right there hovering over it.
A silver band, as you will note. It appears to be a silver band around the center of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, another, there's a couple more I want to get to, but here's one here that I've seen before. I didn't make copy, then this one seems a little bit clearer. This is a picture of 4 rings of light, blurs of light up in the air. And I'll be very quick to say, Wes, that this is one that didn't completely impress me. I mean, it looks like somebody took a picture, and then they took a little thing, and they stuck a hole in the negative, and they let some light through there to produce this.
There's definitely room for argument on that or question. I agree with you.
And isn't that the one from the postcard, though?
Well, this is the part that surprises me.
There, one is superimposing the other.
Oh, 5 altogether. One of them does look larger, yeah. This is from the U.S. Coast Guard, official U.S. Coast Guard photograph. The U.S. Coast Guard, very quickly, I'll give you a resume of this. Photographer at the Salem Mass Air Station made this phenomenal photograph at 9:35 a.m., July 16th, 1952, through a window screen. He was in the station's photo lab preparing to clean a camera when he noticed several brilliant lights in the sky. He watched them for 5 or 6 seconds, then called another Coast Guardsman in nearby sick bay to come and see the strain. Well, that might explain it, and the other guy was sick. In these few seconds, the brilliant white of the lights had dimmed somewhat. When it suddenly brightened again, he grabbed the camera, clicked the shutter, and this photograph is the result. Well, it's a kind of thing that you have to see to know why. There's room for reservations. Well, it's over here. Now, there's some color photographs. This is something I've never seen before. Color photographs of flying objects. What is this one?
This one was taken by a pilot of the Royal Canadian Air Force. Pilot's name was King. George Popovitz of the Akron Group obtained that, had a copyright direct from the pilot, and I in turn had that copy made from his negative.
Now, this is a picture of a ring of puffy-looking willowy clouds down through one of the dark pockets in the cloud. You can see this light object that looks very much like a flying saucer, but it seems more like light coming from a flying object. Why is there always light emanating from these objects, Quest?
Well, the theory is that could be the force field surrounding the object and its reaction on the photographic negative.
But why then, and some...
Electrical.
Why in some of the photographs does it come out a perfectly clear flying object, where most of them it comes out as a light blur?
Well, that's a good question, one which I frankly won't attempt to answer, because I noticed the same thing. Some comes out as a blur, and others have a very distinct and sharp outline, such as these we have seen.
Have they turned off their force field, maybe, perhaps, early?
Couldn't you explain it this way, that many times when they're over an airplane or a car, the engine stall, then again, they can be right beside it, over it, and they don't stall.
That's right.
So I presume that it is that very thing, Harv, that they do turn it on or they do not turn it on.
That might well be.
Now, let's check a couple of the others now. This one is one, this I didn't see before. What is this one?
That's a flying object taken over the White Sands Proving Grounds in Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Now, this one is even leaving...
By a technician there at the station.
It's leaving a blur of a little hint of a trail behind it, isn't it?
That's right. It was in motion, traveling at the time. That was photographed.
Then that would lend authenticity to it, the fact that it did blur a little, huh?
That was released and sent out by our friend Carl Lorenzen. I obtained that direct from her.
Oh. And in those color photographs, I might say it would be most difficult and impossible to do a faking job when you're working from your original negative.
If I'm not careful, I'm going to lose my perch on the fence. Now, this one looked to me like a model for a new hotel going up on the shores of Miami Beach when I first looked at it, because it looks like a three-decker, or either a three-decked flying object, or three flying objects staggered one behind the other. Now, where was this taken?
Well, this was taken in Ventura, California, by Agnes Sanborn in 1957.
Now, let's see. This is so very, very low. So, and just sitting right there on top of this big cluster of houses. Now, one of the things I notice about this is that over here, let me get this thing out a little bit. Over here in the corner, it looks like a police car or some car there with a marking on the side. Other cars, but no people anywhere. Do you know any explanation?
Right.
Why there are no people staring up at this place? If this object, in fact, is sitting there, I'm sure the streets would be filled with people.
I think that this is the photograph, is it not, that I mentioned a party that where you could send for it, Wes? And
that's right.
This particular woman had never before seen one. She had only a very inexpensive camera with her, but it had color film in it, and it was with that camera that she snapped this shot.
Why were there no people around looking up at this? This thing is just as big as light right on top of these houses.
It's right over that.
Agnes Sanborn made the comment in this notarized affidavit that she and her sister were driving to the Inglewood, Los Angeles airport at the time when they saw this object. And she quickly got out of her car, had colored film in her camera, and snapped it. Now, she took these houses, of course, included in the view, and this thing could just have arrived there momentarily to the extent that no one had emerged from their houses at the moment she pulled off the highway and took the photograph. It could have all happened just 1, 2, 3.
God.
It didn't have to be hovering there for a half an hour that people could have seen it.
I'll tell you, very quickly, in the limited time we have left, let's get to a couple more of them. Now, one that impressed me, rather, was the one taken by a girl. This is the one we've discussed before, so let's save that perhaps for another time. We'd like to have you back again, because you've got so much material here. But one taken by a girl somewhere.
You had some wonderful black and white ones there before, and you mentioned that Don Brill and George Shuba had taken them, and they're the ones who have done a lot of work for me, too. They're... to get the good, clear results from the negatives.
Here are the Sharon Hogue photos. Sharon Hogue of El Canyon, California. 18-year-old girl at the time, the daughter of a minister, taking time exposures of the full moon, 15-minute time exposures, so the camera propped up against the base of a tree while she would go inside and play the organ, then come out and turn it up for another 15-minute exposure. Did not see this object at all, but when the film was developed, it showed up in one of the negatives.
Well, my logical question on this one would be, if she had the exposure on for 15 minutes, and this flying object is situated up here in the sky, perfectly outlined as if it's standing perfectly still. You can even see the ribs in the structure of the object. Well, if it was on for 15 minutes, why was not there a blur? It had to come and go. It just didn't materialize there all of a sudden, did it? Could you explain why there wouldn't be any blur, Earl?
Well, I would say that frequently when they hover, they're standing quite motionless. And then when they do move, they move very rapidly. Now, if this is a 15-minute exposure, it's understandable that there'd be nothing showing while it was moving because it moves so rapidly. Then it stops still.
You think there'd be a suggestion of a blur. This is
not necessarily. Not if it's that long an exposure at night.
I'm still a little critical.
I will be honest that in a photo of that type, there is room for questions.
Yes.
There's a possible hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Not above reproach on that.
But collectively... Now you've just turned the page. You have turned to a page that, to me, these I've seen before. It's a picture of a flying object situated on the sand with rocks and all behind it, but this one looks like it could be a photographer's mock-up, you know. Doesn't it to you?
Yes. What I about, admit there's that possibility.
But how about the man...
A tabletop miniature, something of that nature.
Yeah. What about the man in back of these photographs? This means a lot often, doesn't it? The people who stand behind them?
Oh, yes. Mondrazi was... supposedly a very reputable man.
I mean, there are nuts in every field, so...
That is correct. What was he a member of, Earl? Do you recall what organization?
The Edison Society is an honorary society.
Right.
You know, just...
In Italy.
Very honorarily, I just looked up at the clock and was amazed that our entire half hour of our UFO roundtable has elapsed once again. It seems to fly by every Thursday night. And we have to make room now for the KYW News, which is standing by, and then the Tom Griffith Show. But just before we go, now let me remind you, since we're talking about things up there in the sky, well, some good news for budget-minded vacationers, yes, and there's a definite relationship to things in the sky. Because now you can take a winter vacation in beautiful, sunny Florida, and you can fly there, not by UFOs, but at rock-bottom fares on Eastern Airlines Economical Airbus Service. Just think about that now. You can fly nonstop to Tampa, St. Petersburg for just $48. One stop to Miami for only $54. And these low fares include all the tax, too. Now you can afford that winter vacation in the Sunshine State when you fly Eastern's thrifty Airbus. Why, you know, Eastern's Airbus is actually less expensive than driving. And just look at all the time you save, too. Extra time that you can spend on one of Florida's sun-drenched beaches. Now, if you want to use a car while you're down there in Florida, Eastern will be glad to make all arrangements for a rental car for you. Make your plans right now to take a winter vacation on Eastern's Airbus to Florida. Airbus reservations are made only through the purchase of a ticket from your travel agent or any Eastern Airlines ticket office. My thanks very much to Earl Neff again for joining me on the UFO Roundtable. I regret the absence tonight of Bob Grove, a rather UFO panelist. And thanks a million to Wes Fitch, who has shown me some photographs tonight that I would previously have considered unbelievable. Wes, can you please stop back again sometimes?
Very happy to, Art.
I would certainly appreciate it. Earl, any last two seconds?
I was just going to say, Wes was going to tell, and I hope some future time, about a UFO that went over the United States back in the 1800s before we got off the ground by the Wrights.
Now, you've got to promise. Okay?
It's a deal.
All right.
Deal,
right now, we'll have the weather pulse for you in just a moment. First, some very familiar music.